coming to the meeting. One wanted just to check if ever there's anyone we're expecting, but I got the item that actually follows an apology. But in the adoption of the agenda, I thought maybe we could actually just check, because the big intention of our discussions today is to actually make sure that we have the induction, because our program, which actually are issues that we look at the key divisions responsible for the mandate, the core function, policies, legislation, administered, linked to those who will be presenting to us, where the agencies will be reporting, and the distribution of roles and responsibilities where mandates are shared with other departments and or provinces. Today's theme, honourable members, it's the theme of trade, export and investment, and focuses on trade policy, trade and investment promotion and facilitation. Following the divisions, we'll be providing the overview on the international trade and economic development, trade and investment South Africa, and invest South Africa. So those will be the main focus. So I think one would like just to make an appeal early that the induction is for the purposes of sharing information. We're not looking at an in-depth policy debate. We're hoping that we can be able to familiarize members with the structure of the department. So we're not looking at big engagement, but at least it's introduction. At least you'll have even knowledge of who our officials are dealing with, what unit, who are present here today. So allow me to welcome the A team to today's meeting. I did actually ask that we look at the adoption of the agenda, because in the list that we've got, it's actually listed on item 1005 to 1045. Maybe if one can remind the entities and the department that we try and actually share the time. We would actually apologize that it is started a bit late, with about 10:15, about 15 minutes late. Can I check with the committees if ever maybe you comfortable with the issues highlighted on our agenda 10:05 to 45, 10:50 to 11:55? We're hoping that we should actually be able to finish by 12. So if you are happy with the adoption of the agenda. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I propose that we adopt the agenda. Thank you.
Let's hear from the meeting if there is agreement to the seconder for the adoption of the agenda.
Yes. Thanks, Chair. I support.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Then there is actually, with the adoption of agenda, the issue of apologies. I do have an apology from the committee member who's at a different debate, Mr. F. Mulder. I do actually have as well an apology from Mr. Tring. And Mr. Cuthbert is here now. He did actually indicate that he'll be delayed. Welcome. So I think then it will actually take us to the presentation. You wanted to say something?
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to make a proposal, if you can accommodate it in terms of time, that we be introduced to the staff who are here, all members of entities who are here, or divisions, so that we can familiarize ourselves with him. But it's up to you, Chair.
I think it's in order. we can actually be able to do that. So I'm sure you're going to start introducing yourself, and then they can, so that they can know you too, and you can actually, you see, it works both ways.
Okay. I'm Judy Hermans.
I am Toza Mamandash. Namaskar, Dr. Wu.
Hebim Muyana.
My name is Yoli Swayako.
Morning, my name is Raisibu Mwata.
Morning, my name is Ben Cuthbert. We're going around this way, hey, Yunis.
Good morning, Yunus Hussain, head of the Investment South Africa.
Good morning, Nerato Martabo. I'm the Deputy Director General for Trading Investment South Africa.
Good morning, my name is Elizabeth van Rienen, Chief Director for Trade Policy and Research in the International Trade and Economic Development Division of the DTI.
Oh, that's a long one.
Fulufelu Mushi, Parliamentary and Cabinet Officer for Minister Patel.
Morning, my name is Nondombi Madomela, the Acting Group Chief Operations Officer for the DTI.
Good morning, my name is Trudy Hartzenberg from the Trade Law Centre, TRALAC, a non-profit working on trade issues in Africa.
We, the team at the back.
Good morning, my name is Tantatibiz, I'm from RIFA.
Good morning, my name is Kuzaishe and I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, I'm Raja Azakani, I'm from Parliament Communications.
Good morning, my name is Fai.
Morning, my name is Fai Jacobs, from the Small Business Committee, but I'm also just looking in and observing as part of the economic cluster.
We are obviously part of the economic cluster. We've got lots of colleagues. We look at programs. We actually come through to be able to observe and support. Thank you very much and welcome. Can we then take the presentation?
We're not an institution table chair.
Oh, okay.
Good morning, my name is Zogwanda Matalane. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Do mangoes work here?
Good morning, my name is Tandama Dima, committee secretary.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm sure we can proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, good morning again. Me and my two colleagues and myself will be presenting on the function of trade, exports and investment in the department, in an attempt to help you understand how the mandate and the functions come together and work together. So just very quickly, a list of the presenters. On my left hand side is G. Mataboge, you've already met her. Acting head of Invest SA is Yunus. And then International Trade and Economic Development, ITED for short. The DDG is Ambassador Xavier Karim. I convey to you that he would have liked to be here, but this week there are negotiations with the UK on the Brexit rollover agreement. So him being the lead negotiator, he's occupied there. So I'm standing in for him. The outline follows the order of trade policy, that's ITED. Trade promotion, which is TISA, and investment promotion, which is Invest SA. So, starting with ITED, it's the policy division. We do trade and investment policy, we do trade negotiations, investment treaties, we manage bilateral relations from a policy perspective, and with respect to our African agenda, we advance that in a way which I will explain a little bit later. To help you understand the structure of the division, the business units, chief directorates. There's a chief director for trade negotiations, a chief director for Africa multilateral economic relations,
bilateral relations with the rest of the world, in other words, excluding the continent, non-proliferation, and then within the Office of the DDG, there's myself, trade policy and research. Non-proliferation, the chief directorate is effectively the secretariat for the Non-Proliferation Council of South Africa. Trade policy approach, we take an integrated trade and investment approach because trade has to support industrial development. And so also tariff setting has to support industrial development. Now tariff setting happens in an independent process conducted by the International Trade Administration Commission, ITAC. And as I say, tariff setting is informed by the objectives of the trade policy. An important aspect of the work is to establish trade rules that would assist our exports of higher value-added, more advanced products. We preserve, in our negotiations, we work to preserve policy space for industrial development. For example, to commit, when we commit to tariff reduction, we try to keep those commitment levels as high as possible, even if we apply the tariffs at a lower rate. What we call in between the bound rate, the committed rate versus the applied rate, we call it water. So water is policy space.
Water.
Policy space. Let's call it that. The point is you would have the possibility to increase tariffs later if you need to. And then also preserve policy space in rulemaking. We don't want to commit to rules that would later, when we want to develop a particular industrial support measure, we don't then want to discover that we've committed to rules in the past that now don't allow us to develop those measures. Also in our trade negotiations, we protect sensitive sectors, particularly the ones that have employment, the ability to create employment, and attracting investment, that's the actual function is with ESA, but the policy perspective on that, we are also involved in. And of course, in investment that would drive employment is of more interest. I'm just running through priorities at a very broad level. As the chair indicated, the purpose here is not to give you an in-depth briefing on the work. It's really just to set out the structure and the broad understanding. So this is really very broad. In the World Trade Organization, WTO, our basic position is we support a rules-based system in which the WTO is core. We seek reform in the WTO to rebalance imbalances and inequities of the past. In the Uruguay round, for example, developing countries in general probably got a bit of a not-so-good deal. In some cases we were, if I say we, I mean developing countries in general, we made a lot of commitments in areas that were important to us, like agriculture. And in the same way, we didn't quite get the market access that we might have wanted into the developed countries in agriculture, for example. That is really just one very crude example, but I'm trying to illustrate what I mean with past imbalances. So what we've seen in the two decades since the Uruguay round is that developed countries have capitalized on their gains in the Uruguay round, and developing countries have maybe fallen somewhat behind, but now you have some emerging developing countries like China, which is now increasingly challenging the developed countries. And this is where a lot of discomfort in the developed countries come from. They also seeking reform, but in such a way that they cement the advantages even further. And of course, for us, it's very important to address past injustices. So we need to see reform that will foster inclusivity, development, promote agricultural reform, industrial development, and technology transfer. Technology sometimes comes in the form of investment. So we pursue a developmental agenda in the WTO, and we work with like-minded countries in, for example, the Africa Group, the ACP, and the rest of the BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China. Our agenda in Africa. From a policy perspective, we pursue what we call a developmental economic integration model. That deviates, well, it differs from the traditional linear integration model, which, for example, the European Union followed. You know, you have a free trade agreement, you move to a customs union, monetary union, and so on. We started that in SADC, for example. That was the initial integration model in SADC. And a few years down the line, we realized that South Africa benefits from this because we have the capacity to make use of the agreement, to export. But many of the other countries do not have the manufacturing base to start with. So the things that they produce are not manufactured goods, and that's not what the SADC neighbors import. All of us largely import manufactured goods. So if we don't manufacture goods for our neighbors, then the trade potential isn't there. So that's when we sat back and said, you know, we need to take a step back because we start from such different levels of development. And then this was the birth of the developmental integration model. So we talk about market access, you know, the traditional free trade agreement, but in tandem with that, we talk about the development and diversification of productive capacity, manufacturing capacity, and part of this, doing this, is through building regional value chains. And then the third pillar of this is cross-border infrastructure development, coordinated cross-border infrastructure development, because if you can't move goods, you can't trade them. And if it's too expensive to move them because of poor infrastructure, ports where goods are held up for a long time, roads that are poor, customs facilities at the borders that cause delays. Those costs built into your trading chain then makes you uncompetitive. So at the moment, the big current priority is, of course, the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, CFTA. But the work is still ongoing in the TFTA, Tripartite Free Trade Agreement, which is the agreement among the 26 countries of SADC, the East African Community, and COMESA. And then, of course, the work continues all the time in SADC, Southern African Development Community, and in SACU, Southern African Customs Union. Bilateral engagements, when I say this, I mean mostly with countries outside the continent. About bilateral engagements within the continent, my colleague, DDG Matabokhe, will be talking some more. So with the rest of the world, obviously there are higher priority countries, mainly countries of the European Union individually, the United States, the BRICS countries, and so on. So there we pursue cooperation with them. That would take us towards the objectives and the broad approaches to trade supporting industrial development, and so on. So this was the broad, very broad policy thoughts. So if we say that ITED does the policy, then the implementation of these happen in the divisions of TISA and ISA. What do I mean by that? We open a market, we negotiate a trade agreement. So the market is now open. But our South African exporters have to be assisted to fully benefit from that, to make use of that. So that is the domain of TISA particularly. Obviously we have a number of stakeholders and people who we regularly consult.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but for my, just to understand what's being presented to me, if it's the first time, like TISA and ISA, if you can just say what it is, just once, and then we'll take it then. Please. Thank you, Chair.
I'm sure
they'll
be used to
it. Yes, yes. TISA is Trade and Investment South Africa. That's a division of the DTI, which is being led by DDG Matabokhe. ISA is Invest SA, that's the Investment Promotion the vision of the department, and that is being led by Mr. Hussein. So you would understand within the department, these three divisions coordinate, but we also coordinate with the industrial development division. After all, trade works for industrial development. Trade doesn't exist for itself. It's a servant of industrial development. We work with a number of departments within the cluster system, with their subcommittees and task teams, but also specifically, if I can highlight some specific departments, that would be DIRCO, Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, and then National Treasury and such. We work with the International Trade Administration Commission, ITAC, because they are the entity that set tariffs. They create rebate provisions, which is in favor of manufacturing mostly. Trade remedies, by trade remedies I mean duties that are levied for specific reasons, for example, a countervailing duty against a company that subsidizes unfairly, an anti-dumping duty against a company that after investigation is found to dump, and important export control. There are a few such products, for example, second-hand clothes, and a few others. NEDLAC, National Economic Development and Labour Council, and the Agricultural Trade Forum. Agricultural Trade Forum is similar to NEDLAC. It's focused on agriculture only. It includes a business constituency which includes both primary producers and agro processors. And then it also includes a labour component and, of course, a government component. Export councils. Engagements with other governments in these formal arrangements, like binational commissions, joint economic commission committees, and so on. Very important, we have to coordinate very closely with our support partners. That's Botswana, Eswatini, Lesotho, and Namibia. Because we are in a customs union, that means that trade agreements, as soon as tariffs come into play, trade agreements have to be negotiated, not as South Africa, but as SACU, in order to preserve the common external tariff. A common external tariff is a core characteristic of a customs union. And then, of course, we do regular reporting to Parliament, so you will see us from time to time in much more detail on very specific issues. Chair, that concludes the discussion of the International Trade and Economic Development IT Division.
If you can proceed to the next one, it will be easier just to pick it up at the end for comments from members.
Noted, Chair. Thank you very much. And thank you, Elizabeth. For the benefit of the members, I think just to simplify what it is that we do, we're somewhat of a triumvirate of trade and investment in the department. So we get ITED, International Trade Economic Development Vision, that opens up the markets. They negotiate, they deal with the tariff issues, and we close the deals. And in closing those deals, we close the deals insofar as facilitating for exports and facilitating for investments. So if you look at the trio as the opening markets and closing deals type approach, then you're able to differentiate somewhat what it is that we do. But everything is interconnected. If they don't negotiate the market access for us or set the rules, negotiate them at the WTO, it becomes very difficult for us to have a predictable environment, for example, for exporting. Similarly, they also need the support of the regulatory divisions insofar as their investment. So everything is kind of interlinked, but we'll assist the members with some parts of it. So that's the one part. So this
maybe just to disturb you, the point is that there might be issues. I'm just saying that comes in between, because we actually have issue of manufacturing, big, but there's issue of manufactured products dumped at us, and there's a whole thing of managing what we send out and what we bring in. So that's an area where I just thought if you speak to that, it can be quite helpful if it's not part of what's going to be covered by the presentation, because it's quite crucial. There's lots of discussion around that point. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. We'll make a note of it. I think between Elizabeth and I, we could address the matter when we have the discussion. I think it's a critical area. So our purpose for now was just to provide an overview of the different divisions. So when it comes to TISA, as Elizabeth mentioned, our purpose really is to support the industrialization agenda. There is an appreciation that the amount of support that we put into the economy to raise productive capacity, that productive capacity has to be absorbed somewhere. And our market as a country is not large enough to absorb, you know, all the produce or the product that we want to stimulate in the economy. So we need to have external markets. We need to have external consumers, external customers. So that's why we have to have a concerted, well-thought-out export drive. And TISA is responsible for that part of the work, particularly when it comes to the rest of the world. Our approach is a bit more nuanced when it comes to the African continent, but I'll speak to that through the presentation. So the context we operate in is also rooted in the understanding that exports account for 32%, give or take, of South Africa's GDP. So it's quite a huge contribution. And the biggest thing now, the context as well we operate in, we're operating in a context where through the president and the SONA and the minister last week with the budget vote speech, is that we'll be pursuing a reimagined industrial strategy. And that reimagined industrial strategy means that we also have to have a sharper conversation and narrative and support for the export drive for the country. Because whatever strategy we're going to roll out to support industrial production in the country, we have to make sure that we support equally the export drive and ramp up our efforts and instruments around the export drive and the capacity required, human and financial, to do so. Because, again, it's a value chain. 32% of GDP. Members must please be mindful. Because that also speaks to the potential for labor productivity. Exporting companies create jobs. They sustain jobs, they retain jobs. So it's quite important that we raise the competitiveness of our companies and support them to access global markets. Another important rationale for us is that the president the country broadly driven by the president, we have an investment target for the country over the next 5 years, $100 billion. And we are quite mindful that the bulk of the companies that are going to come from abroad, even domestic companies that are going to invest, they will not necessarily be investing only for the South African market. So even our investment drive is connected to our external drive, right? And our exports and the like. So it's quite important that as part of our value proposition, we indicate the market access that is offered by being in South Africa and investing in South Africa and how we can support you then to get the product you're going to be manufacturing in the country externally. So our conversation as well in investments is quite connected to the exports. So I thought I should provide that context, honorable members. Our targets and our approach as a division and what we do in the department is linked to what the National Development Plan sets for us, as well as, of course, our medium-term strategic framework that we are busy reviewing. The National Development Plan has said that we need to grow our exports by 6% per annum by 2030. That's a big ask. And it's not just growth that is going to be dependent on the DTI. It's about how do we coordinate all the different spheres of the economy, of government, private sector, for us to be able to reach that target. How does national government work with provincial government, work with local government? So there's a number of coordinating mechanisms and platforms that we need to strengthen to reach that target. The NDP also encourages or sets the target that we need to export and manufacture products and see a growth of about 7% per annum, basically double the current manufactured product numbers in 10 years by value. And also that exports of services need to constitute 40% of total services supplied by country by 2030, and that as a country we need to capture 1% of total world exports by 2030 in value. 1% may sound small, but we're talking about a low base of, I think we're at 0.5% now. So it's really about doubling
the volume and value of South African exports by 2030. We are now almost in 2020, so it's about 10 years. So we need to literally have all hands on deck around that, structurally and otherwise. So those are the targets that we're working towards, honourable members. This just re-emphasizes the alignment to the NDP and TSF outcomes 4 and 11 particularly, and of course broadly export-led industrialization and export-led economic growth that the President has spoken to. Now, as a division, we have three strategic objectives that we work around and work towards. The first one is in support of industrialization. And we do that by stimulating global demand for South African goods and services. So while our colleagues in the industrial policy and industrial financing space and investment are looking at supporting companies to invest, to produce, we then have to make sure that we stimulate demand for whatever products that are produced in the country, in the sectors, priority sectors and the like. So that's how we support industrialization. Our second objective, we support transformation. And how we do that is in an effort to inculcate an export culture in the country so that entrepreneurs in the country, current and future, already have a global outlook in the kind of work, or rather in their growth strategies. We also facilitate the creation of new exporters so that we can bring more exporters into the economy. And we have a dedicated program around that to support companies to get to a level of export readiness. So that's our contribution to transformation. We also support continental integration, specifically intra-Africa trade and intra-Africa investments, because one of our core responsibilities is facilitating outward investments by South African companies into the rest of Africa. Our approach to the continent is different from our approach to the rest of the world because there's an appreciation that we have to have a nuanced approach. We have to have a developmental approach. So our approach is steeped in actually getting investments, South African investments into the continent, and not just exporting from South Africa and assuming that there'll be perpetual markets on the continent for our products. So we need to have a much more sustainable cooperative approach to the continent, invest on the continent in infrastructure and industrial capacity. Because we also have an understanding and appreciation that where our investments go as a country, our exports go. So we'd rather ramp up that investment drive on the continent. We'd actually, Chair, I know I'm kind of punting, but we'll follow the right procedures to make the request. We believe that it would also be very prudent for us to have an Africa strategy, Africa agenda presentation, and all the instruments that we're using as a department to the members at some point. So I hope this is not an appropriate comment to make, but we'll follow the right processes to get.
I thought I should actually just compliment, because I think that's quite important, because you see, the example of what you use of 2030 shows where things should be by a particular time. Obviously, we will be interested to know what's your program, what's your plan. Yep. But obviously, we may need to have some back reflection of where we're coming from and where we are now. So that discussion is actually quite important because it makes the linkages of saying, if you say this is going to be done by that in so many percentage, where are you, where are you from, how are we doing? Those are things which are quite crucial. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. This slide gives the members a sense of how the division is structured, Trade Investments of Africa. We've got five core areas of work that we look at, one being export development and support. This is where we focus specifically on the creation of the national export culture and creation of new exporters. And we believe that this is key for transformation. We put quite a number of our new black industrialists, for example, that were not exporting before to the program. We run what we call the Global Exporter Passport Program. So a number of companies that have never exported before are thinking about exporting will be put through this program. At the end, they get what we call an exporter passport, which indicates some level of export readiness because they've been trained through the requirements of being an exporter, how you negotiate a contract with a freight forwarder, how do you comply with labeling requirements. So there's quite a number of things that are involved before a product can be exported to a particular market. So this program is meant to build that capacity. So we roll it out throughout the 9 provinces every year. So every year we've got a program and we go to all the provinces. And on average per annum, we train about 800 plus companies on that. So that's one of the key areas that we run. And in tandem with that, of course, is national outreach and awareness workshops, just to get a number of the citizens and entrepreneurs aware that exporting is actually one of the linchpins of competitiveness, and it has to be inculcated in any company's growth strategy, SMME or otherwise. We also have an export help desk, which is in the department, where a number of global and domestic inquiries are processed for exporting and for sourcing, and we also run a trade lead system. The other area of work is the export promotion and marketing. Now, this is where we stimulate the global demand for our products. We run what we call the Export Marketing and Investment Assistance Scheme. This is an incentive scheme where we support export-ready. It's important that we underscore that export-ready companies that are looking for new markets or that have already have markets and are looking to diversify throughout the world. So we provide funding for that. There's criteria and guidelines around that. This unit also creates and sustains markets for African goods and services abroad. And as I mentioned, we increase demand for South African goods and services. So we use a number of instruments for this. National pavilions, members may have heard of the trade fairs that we go to, the different types, different sizes, you know. So that's what we do. Outward missions, even inward missions that we facilitate from strategic markets for them to come and see the productive capacity in South Africa. So this unit does quite a lot of that, the promotional and the marketing work in stimulating demand for our goods and our services. We then have the Foreign Service Management Unit. So this is where we manage the DTI's network of foreign offices. The DTI sends diplomats abroad, economic diplomats abroad. Currently, we've got 46 offices globally. So the Division Trade Investment South Africa that I'm responsible for also manages those offices administratively as well as provision of strategic direction, because our foreign economic reps, they assist us in achieving the export and the investment drive and all the other economic priorities set for the country. We then have what we call the International Business Operations Unit. This is where we focus specifically on providing commercial leadership, if you will, bearing in mind that the bulk of the policy work in these spaces are done by ITEP, so we bring in the business angle of it in our engagement with the BRICS, IORA, G20, and the like. So we'll be the ones responsible, for example, for the BRICS Business Council, while ITEP will be responsible for the BRICS Trade Ministers Meeting. So the difference is being they're driving the policy, we're driving the commercial connections. So that's just in case the members would get the assumed duplications on the work. ITED does the bulk of it, same things, but policy. We do it commercially, business to business, or government business. So that's that. And, of course, we manage the export councils, including the funding that we provide to them on an annual basis. And this unit also looks at Team Export South Africa. This is where we're looking at the coordination that is now required in ramping up our export drive in this new context of a reimagined industrial policy. So we need a Team Export South Africa approach. National, provincial, local, business, government, all spheres, civil society, academia, and the like. This unit also deals with business fora, bilaterally and otherwise. If the president, for example, undertakes a state visit, and on the margins we need to have business fora, business engagements, this unit will do that. And this unit is currently busy as well with a review of our export strategy, which is 6 years old, so we are of the view that it's time for review. So we'll be sharing some of the outcomes of that review with the members along the way. Last but not least is a unit called Trade Invest Africa. And the fundamental approach of this unit is facilitating what we call outward investment-led trade to the continent. And the reason why, you know, the approach is centered on outward investment is understanding that quite a number of African countries now, unlike before, one, have their own industrialization strategies, either domestically or regionally, because even at the SADC we're working on a regional industrialization strategy. And a number of these strategies are also highlighting similar priorities that we're highlighting, localization, transformation of the economy and the like. It then says that as South Africa, for us to continue to be a strategic partner on the continent, we need to be a strategic partner in the industrialization drive of these different economies. And for us to do that, then we need to invest in those economies. We need to create sustainable partnerships and make sure that we facilitate for our companies to invest in a number of the countries on the continent. Again, the notion that from South Africa we can just continue to send products to the continent and not necessarily for sustainable partnerships in the form of investment, that's a non-starter. So it wouldn't be smart on our part. So our long-term growth strategy for ourselves and for the continent is to then pursue an outward investment-led strategy. And, of course, what the unit also does is to strengthen bilateral relations with a number of the countries on the continent. And we support the development integration and the continental free trade agreement that has been negotiated through ITED. So one thing that we care about is that the CFTA will only derive the benefit and the value out of the CFTA if we make sure that companies take advantage of that through investing, through exporting. So Trade Invest Africa is created to do exactly that. Just by way of background, some of the members may come across older documents that would refer to the creation of an Africa Export Council. So that idea, when Cabinet proposed in 2014 or took a decision that he create an Africa Export Council, it was since transformed into Trade Invest Africa. Because we also have an appreciation that as Africans, we cannot engage and approach our own continent, you know, with a vehicle like an Export Council as if our purpose is just to export to the continent and nothing else. So Trade Invest Africa is meant to root our strategy properly to say we're here as a sustainable partner on the continent. We're here to trade with you, intra-Africa trade. We're here to invest, intra-Africa investment. This is what South Africa stands for insofar as the economic strategy for the continent and economic growth partnership strategy for the continent. So, Honorable Chair and members, I will leave it at that and hand over to my colleague.
Good morning and thank you, honorable members. I think during the course you're going to learn a lot of acronyms. And I come from the smallest one, which is Investment South Africa. It's ISA, it's not ISIS. Investment South Africa. So Investment South Africa is a program of the DTI, Program 8. And it deals with investment promotion, investment facilitation, and investment aftercare. So what we did is that we created the division, and InvestSA is the brand. InvestSA is the brand for the one-stop shop on investor facilitation services. So when you're out there, you might hear a lot about InvestSA. That's what we started working on since 2016. So in establishing Investment in South Africa in 2016, we developing what we call a national investment promotion agencies. So countries compete for investment. And in competing for investment today, there are more than 2,000 investment agencies. We're just one of them. So we compete on behalf of the country for investment. So what we do is we support and facilitate direct investment flows, promote domestic investment and linkages, and establish a one-stop shop service for investors so that we can facilitate interdepartmentally and intergovernmentally to make it a much more smoother experience for investment that comes to South Africa. So investment in South Africa is a focal point throughout government on investment. And since we've been established, I mean, although we've been quite small and growing, we've been able to compete globally for investment and compete against other ideas itself. So just in a nutshell, our program is Program 8. It has a budget of 58 million. Our target to develop an investment pipeline is 50 billion. Going up to 21, 22, 60 billion, but we are critically linked to the implementation of the investment mobilization drive of 100 billion, and I'll talk to that in a moment or so. So what we do is we provide a specialist advisory service for investors, which is free of charge. So it's a government service that is free of charge for domestic and foreign to retain, expand, as well as to attract new investment in the country. And then in the facilitation and aftercare service, we fast track, unblock, and reduce red tape in government. And also for investors, that is global best practice shows you that when you have an investor and you take care or look after the investor, they're more likely to retain and expand. So you need to be always on the, it's like a customer service. You need to be always at the call or to investors so that they also ambassadors and speak to their global or peers to say invest further in South Africa or there's a new opportunity in South Africa. So we do a lot of advocacy, we do a lot of aftercare work in terms of roundtables, investor roundtables and workshops, advising on policy issues, regulatory issues, and then you pick up clients and you resolve the issues. So in the core, in terms of investment best practice, in terms of the World Bank, the three core elements in terms of an IPA, the one is investment promotion. The investment promotion is your outreach, your lead generation, your investment attraction, the investment marketing unit where you have, where basically it's a salesman speech, where here we got the country to come to invest in South Africa, but we develop projects throughout the 9 provinces and working with fellow sub-national IPAs to develop projects for investment, also working with the DFIs for investment. Then on investment facilitation, what we do there is that we provide a specialist advisory service on information, the South African policies, legislation, regulatory environment, and then we work with companies in the facilitation stage to fast-track and unblock issues for them in the investment business case. And then I said in the aftercare, for us, once a company comes to South Africa, they give life and we look after them throughout the process, but we're constantly contacting them. There's always issues because investment never happens or does happen in Pretoria at the head office, but investment is throughout the country. It's in all localities in the country, and therefore I think when I get into more detail, we'll need the committee support as well as other members of the other economic cluster and division support, because we cut across national, provincial, and local government, right? So our functional objective, basically, as I said, is the investment promotion, facilitation, aftercare, but we're a key focal point for the investment mobilization drive. The President's first investment conference was coordinated and done by us as a secretariat together with Economic Development and the IDC and the Presidency to attract $100 billion, of which we have pledges for $300 billion. And now it's our job now to make those pledges into commitments and actual investments. So we have a monthly tracker to say how we're moving the needle towards more investment, and you see over the period of time, every month there's new launches of investments, and then we also deal with issues, because people have a lot of issues in terms of environmental impact or mining permits or municipal facilitation, so we get involved there. And the Honorable Chair, I miss him because that was his previous life. He helped us a lot. He really did a lot in the municipalities throughout the country. We could easily pick up a phone. We didn't need a note verbal or letter or whatever. We just went in there and we got the job done. So that's So thank you, Honorable Chair, and we'll be looking for your support there. So the other key part of us is that looking at key markets or target markets where we attract investment, because we've got traditional markets and we've got emerging countries. And then I think a key part of our exercise is in what the President wants, and all of us, I think this is not a DTI or Investment South Africa, it's a government-wide thing, the investment climate reform, and us improving the ease of doing business in the country for everybody. So we're doing the exercise, we're coordinating, leading that exercise for investors, but it's for everybody. So I'll come to you into some detail then. I think we need to spend some time on that. But we develop an investment pipeline on a quarterly basis of investable projects, and then we work throughout the stage from pre-feasibility to committed investment. That's the job that the team does. We also then will be responsible for the second investment conference, 5 to 7 November this year, in which our target is to intensify and double that 300 billion to 600 billion. That's the target we will do. And then we would also be the secretariat for the President's Investment Council. So in a nutshell, I said, look, in South Africa's case, besides the greatest thing that is always our issue is that we have a media that is totally against us. But in a short time, in this work, I know we've been able to compete globally. We won a number of international awards. So in this six administration, in this 5 years, we'd like to make Investment South Africa in the top 5 investment agencies globally. And then to intensify the President's efforts of $100 billion, we'd like to, although the target is 5 years, we'd like to do that way before the 5 years. So that's call for all hands on deck, so everybody from civil society, labor, as well as government officials and private sector to work more closer together. We're also working with the PPGI, the Public-Private Growth Initiative, on their projects for investment. And as I said, the one-stop-shop approach we have is that we have a national one-stop-shop at head office in Pretoria, and we're rolling them out in the provinces. We have them in Gauteng, in KZN, and here in the Western Cape. But we're going to roll out 3 or 4 more this year in Eastern Cape, Limpopo, Free State, and Northern Cape, and then maybe the 2 the next financial year. Oh, if it all works out well, we can do everything in this year. So we'll have the 9 one-stop-shops. And how the one-stop-shops work is that we bring, an investor makes an appointment, so we bring the rest of government to the table. ESCOM, CIPC, SARS, Labor, Home Affairs, all of them are located there, and then the investor goes to them and has his appointment, and then we follow up and fast-track and look at those issues. So in short, here, this gives you an idea of what we have to do as a country and what the investor, in terms of the investor's cycle. Investor will first plan, explore, look for information, look at 5 or 6 locations, contact many other consultancies or whatever, and then put South Africa in 1 or 4 or 5, and our job is then to compete. Or get to know firsthand to compete. So there's a job that we have to do, there's a job that the investor would want to do. So the investor's cycle is in that diamond, and us is those blocks in terms of what we have to do to attract, establish, retain, and have those linkages with our other divisions such as industrial development and the 2 divisions that we have here. So our work in the investment promotion side is mirrored towards the Industrial Policy Action Plan. We are grouped into 5 major sectors for investment promotion. When you meet them, there will be policy divisions for these sectors, but we are not many, we just clustered into 5. So we have key account managers for the green industries, service industries, resource-based industries, manufacturing and advanced manufacturing. So when an investor comes in the subsector, we will hand them, if it's a green renewable energy one, it will go to the green economy, and the green economy project manager will then seamlessly put a team together and handle the investor from end to end. That's how we would work with So as I said, the one-stop shop is first to provide a physical one-stop shop in a province and work together. So our job is to bring all national governments together, all national entities or SOEs. The province will bring all provincial and local government together, and we'll work together with them. And we use technology where we can today, if Cipla comes, is in two-way trade port in KZN. And Cipla has a meeting with, because they are located in the state, they have a meeting there in KZN. They don't need to fly up to Pretoria if they don't, if they want to meet the Department of Health or the MCC for a licensing. We can do a video conference between that office and this office, being DOH in our office, and this one meeting. So that's how we try to work. So in broad, these are the kind of investment services that we offer, and a lot of investment facilitation from licensing, mainly licensing, permitting, and registrations that we offer to investors, and then also facilitation on incentives, locations, DE. Early on, Elizabeth mentioned the Protection of Investment Act, that we have a process of mediation and arbitration. We will do that initial phase for companies, site visits, and introducing to raw materials, suppliers, and then a whole list of aftercare services, which we are now beefing up and expanding the aftercare service, in rolling out and pulling the unit. So I think here, I think this may be a chair that we will come back to committee and have a more detailed discussion, because this is a very critical and important exercise for us. This is an exercise here on the ease of doing business. The World Bank has 10 indicators on the ease of doing business. We are looking to this, that is alluded to in the SONA, to say that on those 10 indicators, South Africa needs to move from 82nd. South Africa is 82nd out of 190 countries. 10 years ago, we were in the top 50. We declined, right? So we need to get back up into the top 50. So this is a big exercise. And as I said, it's not a DTI. It cuts across all government departments, a lot of entities and SOEs, to make this happen. But we're doing this plus, so this is what I say, 10 plus. Besides this, your other issues on investment that we need to make simplify, or we need to make them better, is issues of visas, issues of environmental impact assessment, issues of water licensing, issues of mining permits, issues of property registration, land transfers, those are, and municipal facilitation. Those are other big ticket items that we work on a daily basis. So for the purpose of this exercise, we're looking at these 10 indicators where we want to be in the top 50. Now, this is the World Bank exercise, and we're working with this over the next 2 to 3 years to reform South Africa's ease of doing indicators. Now, I'll just give you one example. So you look at the tender, we have 5 working groups already. Those are the ones in purple, and the green one, we have to establish the working group. If you look at starting a business, right? In starting a business, South Africa is ranked 136 out of 180 countries. Now you tell me that South Africa, as being a sophisticated country, should be in the top 10, not 136. This is the work that we have to do. Right? So how it works is that in the starting of doing business in South Africa, when you want to come to register, you've got to go to CIPC, you've got to go to SARS, you've got to go to UIF, you've got to go to compensation. In that process, it takes you 45 days to do it, right? So we have made great strides now with CIPC or automation. So today you can register a company in 1 day. You can get a domain name in 1 day. In October we go live, we'll be able to do a domain name, company registration, BE certificate, SARS certificate, 1 day, right? So that's how we're moving, right? But here's the challenge. UIF compensation. That's why I said we need committee members to talk to other committee members. This is labor. Compensation UIF, we still have to automate that. So although we can get SARS and CIPC up there, you need these two to be up there, because it will still be 45 days, right? Because this takes 30 days to do. So we're working with them to say that they need to automate. If they automate with us, then you'll have a seamless integrated online platform on a mobility app where you get everything in one shot. And we can do that. So if we do that, we go to the top 10. Similarly, we want to do that exercise. So there are two things on this. One is there's policy, laws, which take a little bit of time. And the other one is administration business process. business processes we can easily map out and we can easily reduce through automation and make that easier. Right? It takes 7 steps here, 45 days to do this. So we can cut that off. And we can, in line with the digital aspirations, we can do it. So if we do that, then working with the World Bank, we also then have to go to the private sector to say, look, we have reform. You need to taste the pudding and see if it's the right flavor. And say, right, South Africa, they don't say, no, okay, the thing takes 45 years, because we can do it in 1 day. So for domestic companies in October, we'll be going live with an integrated portal. We just want to do UIF and compensation and that, as well as we'll add the bank. So this is working with the private sector itself to make South Africa more effective. Then we want to work like this across the 10 indicators. So it's over the next 2 to 3 years. We're going to spend a lot of time on this. We'll be hitting a lot of roadblocks in government. That's where we need assistance and support to say these things need to be. Because in one of, for example, in one of the acts, there's a national registering property. There's the National Building Regulation Standard. That act was last reviewed in 1977. I won't tell you when I was born. But 1977 was the last time it was reviewed. But isn't it time things have changed, they've evolved? Things have moved. So those are the things. So with that's where you need assistance to change these things, and business processes easy for us to change. So this, in short, is our structure. This is how we are broken down into those 4-5 sectors, and the direct investment projects and investment climate works on the ease of doing business exercise, and the director special project works on the one-stop shop. And we cut across many, many acts that affect investments. There's too many. This is just a short list of them. So there's many acts we cut across, many laws, many regulations, even things like fire permit, building permit, everything. We deal with all those kind of things. So that's how, even SARS, customs, for example, in the trading across borders, when a good comes into the country, right, you have to deal with SARS, you have to deal with SAPS, you have to deal with customs, you have to deal with Home Affairs, you have to deal with NRCS, you have to deal with SABS. Each one has a different process. So those are the things we're trying to work and reform on, as well as we have many stakeholders. We have a lot of MOUs with foreign investment promotion agencies, with counterpart agencies such as the UK, Japan, and that to make our work easier. We collaborate and partner with them. They assist us, we assist them. Because, I mean, so that's how you expand your footprint. So we have a lot of that. In the main, we're working very closely with the presidency, and a lot of work we do with provincial and local government in municipalities. We get called out for issues of energy connections, energy shortages, water shortages. We get called out to do all those things. And then we work with the World Bank, the UNTAG, and the World Association of Investment Promotion Agencies. So what we do is we offer an end-to-end service to anybody, domestic or foreign, that wants to invest, that has an investment project, has a business plan, and wants to invest in the country. Or we work with the provincial agencies or the SEZs to say, let us develop a project and go out, package it, and promote both to domestically and foreign investors. And then we then facilitate that in the country. That's in short what we do.
We always pick up the passion story as a big problem when you actually make your presentation as officials. I think that's a good point for us, because it does actually show that you're really taking care of detail. Mm-hmm. Welcome on that. Maybe we actually can then go to the earlier part of the presentation. We'll just try and maybe go page by page, if that helps, and then if you have the comments from the members, then we'll actually just pick it up from there. Maybe we can actually start with the first presentation on page 3. I think that's where it really starts. We can look at page 3 and 4. Yes, Mama Natasha.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to everyone. Chair, we accept this induction from DTI. I just want to pose a question of clarity. We currently are faced with a crisis in the sugar industry of flooding of imports that have weakened our industry. And you said one of your of your objectives is to protect SA industry. How have you played this role in this case of the sugar industry? Is that industry is now so vulnerable? Have you played a role? Thank you.
Okay, let me take a few hands on page 345. If there's any comment. Yes.
I also want to check what are the enabling issues that they have done in assisting the cross-border infrastructure development.
I'll take it that I can proceed to page 6-7 if there are any comments from members. Then we can move to page 8-9. Member Mbwen.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Let me first welcome the presentation. And also, I just wanted to check in terms of the interdepartmental coordination. Because some other provinces, they don't even know where to go in terms of making proposal. So I just want to check how far are they dealing with, because I saw here they said they're linking interdepartmental. That means even at local and provincial government, they work with those people. So I wanted to check as to how far are they how is the relationship. Because seemingly some departments don't even know where to make a proposal in terms of business advice and business assistance. Because I'm still here, I will just check the possibility. No, that's the other page. No, thank you, Chair. Thank you.
If you agree, then I can check if ever there's any issue on page 10 and 11. The interesting part, I think, was just the export current account for 32%. Sometimes it's quite good to actually have the number of in rands and cents what the 32% mean, because it actually does encourage to see, you know, what the impact would be in terms of what you're referring to as actually 32% of the GDP. Okay. So are there any issues on 10, 11? And members, if not, can I? Okay, Mbuyan.
Chair, thanks. It's on page 11. Because I hear the department, they think of, they're proposing of doubling the current value. So do they have proposal in on the table? What is it that they want to do to make this value double by 2030? Thank you.
Then we'll pick up page 12-13. Is there any comments? We can pass that and look at page 14 and 15. Well, it's 14 because remember that's the next presentation that we're looking at page 15. Okay, let me take your hand.
Thanks, Chair. I just have one question. At what level did the DTR representative sit in the respective embassies across the globe, please? As in, are they councillors, are they attachés, whatever it may be?
I think maybe in the earlier comment raised by Buyani, the issue when you look at the export promotion marketing. One was actually hoping to check how the unit progress is, particularly when it looks to those who have incentives as black industrialists. Because, you know, in the kind of questions we raise, we're trying to see how it works. And in some cases, we're trying to see where things fit, because the information we're getting is quite important. We might actually at some point also consider how are we able to explain how you work, you know, in a broader scale, the marketing part and more information in terms of what the investors say, as an example. Okay. Mbuyane, on the floor.
Thank you, Chair. On page 14, I just wanted to check as well the creationist and the market, how do they market the department at the, that level of constituency, and also make a proposal that as we are here, we are representing constituencies. I think if they develop their program going down there, they must be able at least to consult and say which program do you need in this specific constituency, so that we are able to talk one language with the department in terms of the service delivery. And also the trade investment sustainable growth strategy. You just mentioned the strategy of making this industry grow. But what are they, the real strategy? Do you have it, whether you can, even if you're not producing it now, but can you be able to forward it so that not ourselves as well, we know exactly what is the strategy of sustaining this industry in terms of the growth moving forward? And also, the 46 offices, where are they located? Do you have globally? Where are they? How can we be able to access them in the process? And also in the on the last one, Chair, page 14, international business operations. I can see that they provide strategic commercial leadership in terms of platforms like your BRICS, vis-a-vis IOR and stuff. So I heard in terms of the BRICS that there are a number of issues that we are dealing with. But are we as South Africans being assisted by this agreement and how? Because seemingly for us is for just to supply raw material. How in the process are we benefiting as South Africans? And do we have strategies of maybe capacitating South Africans to at least now try to use the raw material for their benefit? No, thank you.
I was referring to page 15, 16, and 17. Okay, let me check it out.
Sorry, Chair, for taking you up, eh? TISA has a duty of export facilitation.
Refer to page 14,
Chair. 14, okay, thanks. And currently, the country is suffering hit by Gold's Law of Strike at the Kuha Harbour. What support you will can you please? What can you report to us? What have you done to assist the country facilitate that export? Does export items that are exported at Kuha, your cars, your citrus fruit, what have you done to assist the country? Because that will have a negative impact on the GDP of the country.
We are on page 15, 16, 17.
Perfect. Thanks very much, Chair. Just two questions. There was a significant drop in budget for the Clearing Committee, and I imagine that the Clearing Committee would fall under this particular division. Could you maybe explain to us what it looks like operationally, not having that amount of budget in order to facilitate the clearing of investment? Because I imagine that that's a large mandate of your job. The second question is how does Trudy Makaya's team fit into Invest SA, and who does she report? I understand that it was said she's located in the President's office, but surely there's some form of communication considering the fact that you are going after the 100 billion together. And if you could maybe just have some clarity on that. Thank you.
I think we would actually just proceed, if you can actually just take note. It would have been actually much easier if ever we were having some a sense of some discussion, but the worry is that if one allows that engagement, what really happens, we are going to take fewer of the questions, but the questions which are coming through in comments are giving the sense of our understanding and where really we think your program connects with. So I think if you can be patient, that will actually assist. Because for today, as we're saying, that's induction. It's quite important that we're able to actually follow through if there are issues. The Parliamentary Liaison Officer and our Secretariat will make sure that your presentation gets, you know, captured in a way that we can be able to have committee members accessing that information. Not because we do have the hard copies, but we know that we should actually be able to interact with the information. We will try as members, I suggest, to use the committee to actually follow through on what has been a presentation to the committee, just to, for it to be tidy, so that it's not everyone from the committee who phones you, but I think with the PLO can find a way on how we get that communication going. It might be here in the committee, but there will be in between processes where we can be able to engage. So maybe for now, one would just, because I was looking at you, I was saying, you were getting worried. These are too many questions. Answer. So then let me take honourable members to 19. Yes, Mandasha.
Chairperson, thank you. I so wish, Chairperson, the department can, because this is an induction, just send maybe to the committee secretary, so that members can be comfortable and follow through on what you're doing. Just give us the countries that we're currently trading with, what products, at which scale, and the plan to increase both the export and the countries that we trade with, just so that we have a lot of new members in our committee, so that we can be in the same level of understanding of issues. And Chairperson, I just wanted to make a comment to InvestSA that we will expect sort of a feedback at some point, and we will hold them accountable for the targets that they're giving us today, because that is the lifeline of our economy, Chair. And we'd appreciate updates at the intervals that the committee will decide upon. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, to page 19, if you have any comments, yes, honourable member.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to know about, on page 18, your investment essay, one-stop shops, are they linked with the economic zones, or is it some different places altogether? And why did you choose the five that you have instead of incorporating the others as well?
We were at 19. I think we moved to 2021. Any comments, Buyane?
Thank you, Chair. Page 20. I just wanted to check the InvestSA. One-stop shop. The criteria they use to establish the office, where they say it's in Joburg, those big cities. That means in these rural provinces, what criteria do they use to select in terms of which provinces are we opening the invest as a one-stop shop? What is the instrument used? So that we are on the same understanding as to what is it that we need to produce so that all those provinces can be covered. Thank you, Chair.
I would assume we can look at page 22-23. Covered. and then 24, 25.
Thanks, Chair. Just regarding the ease of doing business, if you drill down into the index itself, and particularly one of the indices, you'll see that workman's comp actually adds the most days to the process itself. What are we doing to engage the Department of Employment and Labour and actually holding them to account? Because it seems as if DTI has sped everything up on their side, but that becomes a serious setback. So it's not only the, just to maybe explain to the committee, it's not only the integration in the system, but it's the actual granting of workman's comp that actually takes so long. And at one stage, I read in a business competitiveness report that at one stage it was taking, in some instances, up to 72 days for that to be granted. So, you know, what kind of interdepartmental arrangement is happening? Because if you work in silos, then I don't think that much is going to be achieved going forward. Thanks, Chair.
For the committee, it will be part of oversight. I'm sure we can actually be positive in welcoming what is it that can be done to facilitate implementation, where work between departments can complement what you're doing for things, for ease of doing business. Because I think that's quite important. I think there's a comment that UNICEF made. And in terms of that comment, I think it's quite important, where on your part, when you know that there are challenges that sort of delay our implementation, the work we do with this and that and other department, the coordination of that space might be something which fits in the oversight, where more than one committee facilitated on our part to make sure that there's more effective implementation can be something that we can be able to try and look at and work with other departments to close the gap, because I think that's quite crucial. Okay. We were page 27, 28, 29. I think it's truly to the end because it's acronyms at the end. So I think maybe the issue of possibility of a joint meeting with employment and labour, that might be, there might be others as well because you talk treasury and other ones, but it should be issue specific where we technically might be unblocking and facilitating communication to actually improve implementation. Covered?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'd like to welcome that recommendation. I think if we stick to it specifically on that related issue and the ensuing outcomes of it, I think that we can maybe achieve something quite great as this committee. And I would just like to say that if we keep the terms of reference of that particular joint committee to be narrow, that it sticks directly to that matter, I think that we'll be even more effective in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
So I think for the department, it will be the implementation. It will be narrow if we issue specific, obviously, because not a point of a joint committee on the overall, but it's in a specific area for unblocking. So I think that's what we really think from the comments of the department is encouraging, and we think it's something that we can be able as a committee to actually engage on and contribute. Okay. So I think it actually concludes our comments, but I think the reflection is that we asking these questions and making these comments because we understood what you presented to us. And I'm sure you'll be actually quite happy that we did. Okay. So the floor is yours, if I can actually ask you to make comments. And then for members who have asked questions, I think I will actually agree that you can interact with the team. If ever you think your question has not been answered properly, then we can speak on that part so that we don't actually see it wait to the end. Floor is yours, team.
Thank you, Chair. In the order of the presentations, the ITED one having been first, so I'll talk about the sugar question. The sugar issue has been around for probably 2 years already. The sugar tariff is not just a simple tariff percentage on a value. It's a so-called formula duty. because the international price of sugar fluctuates quite a bit, and because the international market for sugar is a particularly distorted one through subsidies of other countries. And that's where our sensitivity originates. Our own sugar industry is reasonably competitive. Now, the formula itself has been revised already. I take you back to what I said, the International Trade Administration Commission, ITAC, is the body that does tariff investigations. So when an industry feels that a product is not sufficiently protected, it can lodge an application with ITAC. ITAC has a prescribed procedure in their act, which they go through and they do an independent investigation. And that includes not only the industry itself, but the whole value chain. And they then make a recommendation. In the previous administration, ITAC reported to the Minister of Economic Development, which obviously would a legal process would be followed to transfer that reporting line to what is now the Minister of Trade and Industry. So the formula has already been revised. The formula was such that the reference price, reference international price that would result in a tariff in South Africa was set so low that the tariff rarely triggered. It means that if the world price of sugar, defined in a particular way, falls below the reference price, then a tariff on South African side kicks in. And that tariff could go up and down depending on the difference between the reference price and the actual world price. Now, to the best of my knowledge at the moment, there's a further tariff investigation underway. But part of this process was a development of a plan for the sugar industry together with the Sugar Association of South Africa, SASA, which included not only the tariff issues, but also various measures that the industry body had to undertake in order to approach the whole sugar matter as a comprehensive whole. Chair, I recall that in the previous administration, SASA was from time to time called to the portfolio committee to report on the progress with that plan. I leave that with you. So, again, tariff setting is an independent process that is being done by ITAC. They report to the minister. So we are involved in it in the sense that we can make inputs into the process, and we do, of course, have contact with our colleagues in ITAC. But the process itself is prescribed in the Act, and it reports to the minister. Again, I state the important element that we are part of a customs union. Therefore, the interests of the other four SACU members also come into play here, and they also make input into the process. If I can move to the matter of infrastructure, cross-border infrastructure development, Chair, while it is one of the pillars of Africa economic integration, infrastructure development is obviously not the mandate of the DTI. So we are on the fringes of it. We, for example, might sit in meetings where these things are being discussed, but we are not driving it. In fact, much of the infrastructure development is being driven by, for example, well, DFIs, Development Finance Institutions, for example, by the Development Bank of Southern Africa, the African Development Bank. They identify projects and develop them to a point of making them marketable, and then go out and look for finance for those. So the infrastructure development mainly happen there. Interdepartmental coordination may be slightly different from intergovernmental coordination. Trade is usually seen as a national mandate, and that's why I listed a number of national departments. But of course, that doesn't exclude, the interests obviously are often embodied on a provincial and a local level. But I do believe that DDG Mataboghi from the trade promotion side would have better context there and might give you a better sense of the coordination. In fact, she has already alluded to it, but I think you might expand on that. Chair, thank you. Maybe I can also respond to BRICS, but again, this could be a shared answer. BRICS, firstly, let me say there's no BRICS agreement. BRICS is a cooperation forum. We would, for example, let me use as an example. Last year we created what we call a working mechanism on technical standards and regulations. This creates a platform from where the technical institutions, in our case it would, for example, be SABS, the National Regulator of Compulsory Specifications, and so on, where they could cooperate and where they create a channel. If there's a technical issue that creates a barrier to trade, what would be the channels amongst each other to address these things more speedily than it would normally be done? So that's what I mean by cooperation. There's no free trade agreement in BRICS, and there is no talk of creating such an agreement. Yes, I'll leave it with that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. If the members would allow that I don't necessarily answer the questions in order, I'd like to take what I would deem the easiest first, if that's agreed. Honourable Cuthbert, you have the honour of having posed one of the easiest ones, at least, around I think it was about the footprint, our foreign economic offices, right, and the level at which we have. I did indicate, Honourable Member, that we've got 46 offices currently, however, they are capacitated differently. So where we have actual diplomats that we've sent abroad is 27 offices. And of the 27, all of them are at the level of counselor, bar three offices. So we've got minister counselor, so that's a notch higher. So Washington would be one of them, Brussels, Ethiopia at the moment. And then Geneva. So it's actually four. So of the 27 where we send actual officials from the department, four are minister counselor, the rest is counselor level. The remaining offices are then capacitated by marketing officers who are locally recruited personnel who, however, are experts in their field. So the Vienna Convention allows us to be able to then recruit a specialist individual in country to capacitate our office. The reason why we still have a number of marketing officers is because it's quite costly to post the diplomat. So it's about also managing the budget while we're also trying to maintain the work. It would be ideal that we have more foreign economic representatives. It would be ideal specifically to have more to the African continent based on the priorities that we've set. Currently, we only have 7 offices on the continent, 54 countries, CFTA in effect. We need to have different considerations around that. But we're also mindful of the budgetary constraints that we're working under. So that's on the level of the DTI representatives, or rather the foreign offices that we're managing. We're quite happy to avail to the committee through the processes. We'll engage with our parliamentary liaison officer to share the current map or footprint of our foreign economic offices with the committee, so we'll make sure that we do that. I should, however, indicate that we are undertaking a process of review of the footprint. That review may result in the retention of the current spread and or changes, but should changes occur, we will be advising committee on that. So that's what we shall do. On the question posed by Honorable Mbuyane, again, I'm not going in order, so please pardon me. How are we benefiting from the BRICS? One of the key things that we understood as a country when we joined BRICS around 2010, it was an understanding that the BRICS is a formation of very, very formidable and large economies that contribute a sizable amount to global trade. So it was quite important that we become part of that grouping, not only because of the market opportunities that it presents, but because it also gives us a particular level of a voice, right, in the global political economy, and to be able to speak and influence certain policy developments in the global political economy. So that's the one part. And we have actually noted since joining the BRICS an upward trend insofar as our exports to the BRICS countries, number one. And we've also seen similar upward trend insofar as the investments by BRICS members into South Africa and South African investments even, which are actually, interestingly enough, much higher than BRICS investment in South Africa. So we've also seen quite a number of South African entities invest in the BRICS economies. So there's been a very important strengthening of the economic links between the BRICS countries. We do, however, note, and you pointed this out, Honorable Mbuyane, which is a big issue we are dealing with now, that in as much as there's been growth in our trade with the BRICS, it's still very much skewed towards primary products from us and value-added products that we import from the BRICS into South Africa. So one of the key things that, in addressing this, because we've been having a number of bilateral engagements through also ITED division and the like, to deal with the reasons why our value-added exports are not growing to the BRICS countries. And there's a number of non-tariff barriers and regulatory barriers, technical barriers to trade on the matter. So while we are busy dealing with those issues, the summit, the BRICS summit of 2018 that we had in July, one of the key policy decisions was that, similar to what we're doing towards the continent of South Africa, we need to pursue greater outward investment-led trade to the BRICS while we're continuing with the conversations, because sometimes the conversations take a while. So in the meantime, how do we encourage more of our companies to invest in China, in India, in Russia, in Brazil, knowing again that on the back of our investments we get greater exports. But being mindful that there are a lot of non-tariff barriers that we are facing in the BRICS economies that we are dealing with through the normal bureaucratic platform. So BRICS is still very strategic to us, and we'll continue to refine our approach. And we're also open to being guided and advised by committee as well, insofar as some of the strategies that we are rolling out in that regard. And Honorable Mandasha posed the question of how we are assisting exporters with respect to... Oh, she just stepped out, so let me pause on her questions for now. Okay, back to Honorable Mbuyane's question as well around provincial coordination. That's quite important to us. One of the things that we do on an annual basis throughout the nine provinces is to do the outreach around the creation of export culture and the like. So perhaps there is room for us to broaden the focus of those outreach programs beyond exporter development to some of the instruments around export promotion, similarly some of the instruments around investment promotion. So we'd be happy to look at that going forward as part of the business plan. And one of the things that we're working on as well, Honorable, is that we also feel that we need to be closer to the customer insofar as the export drive is concerned. Yes, we go to provinces, we do the outreach, we provide the training, and then we walk out. So we're looking at a situation where we can also roll out a number of our offices insofar as exporting and providing exporting information, similar to the model that InvestSA has followed. So we're in conversation with a few provinces, so we'll make formal announcements of once we've bedded that down. So there's somebody sitting in Mpumalanga, for example, who wants to know, you know, I'm producing product X, what's the next logical market for me, how do I access that market? So that sort of information closer to the people. So that's one of the things that we're looking at within the upcoming MTF period. So we're hopeful that that will strengthen also the level of constituency outreach and presence, really, that we need to have. Pretoria is too far for a number of enterprises that we need to be assisting. So that's the one. And Honorable Mbuyane similarly asked the question about how then do we propose to double our exports by 2030? Just a $1 million question, because we would have done it now already. But, but part of the strategy, Honorable, is that we have taken a decision, at least in the short term, as part of the review of the strategy as well, to say, how do we begin to do less with more? I know it sounds more like, you know, because we feel like we've stretched ourselves. Sorry?
You mean more with less?
No.
Less with more.
More money, chasing less output but having a bigger impact. The reason why we're saying that, I know it sounds a bit the cognitive dissonance. Because we found that as part of our, of rolling out our ESPO strategy, we've done quite a lot. We've gone to so many pavilions, for example, so many trade missions. So we've done quite a lot, right? And spread ourselves very thin in terms of the financial capacity and the human resource capacity behind that. So we're looking at being very strategic in selecting where we're going to market ourselves and put rather more resources behind, say, I'm giving a ballpark figure, 20 pavilions per annum versus 50 pavilions per annum. But that 20, you double the amount of money that you put behind it and the amount of support. So you're going to do less with more. Are we to get honorable? At least it's so far as the strategy.
We want more for less.
We want more for less.
Yeah, that's the point. That's why I would say it's a different.
No, we're hopeful that the impact will be much bigger because the issue is really the impact. The output's getting towards the impact. That's what we're finding. But the impact being that we need to increase the value and the volume of our export. Absolutely. So that's one of the key things. And it's also about strategically using our bilateral platforms, our government-to-government platforms, so working closely with DERCO to use our diplomatic capital to resolve some of the problems that we have, market access problems. A number of the problems are regulatory, they're political, they're bureaucratic. So we need to leverage those platforms much more, including utilizing the level of the heads of state. So when a president goes on a state visit and we know there are particular market access issues in that economy, we should be able to use that. That's a very powerful capital that we must use. So that's one of the things as well. And of course, strategic sector and product selection going forward. Now that you've got a reimagined industrial strategy, the sectors that have been prioritized in there should be the sectors that we're driving and creating global demand for, so that we can see the connection between our industrial strategy and our export drive as a country. So it's about being much, much sharper. So we may even end up promoting much less products, however, promoting them much more aggressively and looking for greater impact. So that's part of the review that's going on now, and we will have to come back to committee and update committee on what the review is yielding out and how we can tweak our strategy going forward on that. So that's where we are. I'm trying to wait for Honorable Mantashi, but the chair will guide. Oh, she's not coming back. All right, so I may
Well, the point is that there won't be any comments she can't hear. Because I think the idea of this engagement, there's no wrong question, there's no wrong answer.
Mm-hmm.
Because the point of an introduction, and I was just thinking maybe while you're on the floor, there is actually the small, Trudy, the small booklet. Yes, I was actually thinking that we may actually just ask you just to speak to it a bit. And if ever there are any other comments from the team on the questions, we can take that. So we're not saying we have a very clear sense of accountability. This is just engagement to make sure that the introduction is done properly. And I think on your part as well, you're not feeling worried about the kind of questions you ask and say, what are these guys thinking about? Because, you know, it has got nothing to do with our presentation. It's not as bad as that. Can I take your comment on this, because I think it's quite important, and we can actually just try and see how we round up. Remember, we have to finish at 12, and for members, sorry that I'm keeping you seated for a long time, and I think it was quite good that you were able to run in and out for the, you know, comfort issues that you have to deal with. My apology for that. You're on the floor.
Thank you so much, Chair. Just very briefly, the Trade Law Centre, TRALAC, works closely with various divisions within the Department of Trade and Industry, Agriculture and other government agencies as well. We monitor trade negotiations but also analyze our trade performance. And this small booklet summarizes where we stand currently with the African Continental Free Trade Area negotiations. It provides some background on intra-African trade, which we all know is very low by international standards. And one of the objectives of the AFCFTA is to improve and increase intra-Africa trade substantially in the near future. So this summarizes what the agreement looks like, where we stand with the negotiations, and still some of the barriers that we face to intra-Africa trade. So you will note, for example, that South Africa's exports to some countries still face very, very high tariff barriers. There are also regulatory barriers and other issues that are impeding intra-Africa trade and our export performance on the continent. So this is an update, and we're very happy to provide this small booklet to members. We will also bring, I just don't have a print copy at the moment, a small booklet called A Trade Explainer with a lot of clarifications of trade terminology, because as trade people we do use a lot of jargon and a lot of acronyms. And it's useful just to have a small guide that clarifies some of those. So, Chair, we're very happy to assist, and if we can assist with anything else, we'd be very happy to do that. Thank you.
I think the issue about the continent is quite important. I was actually thinking that we can try and conclude our discussion for today, for this induction. But I would like to then ask the officials if ever there are any comments you've got, because you're answering questions. But now we can actually take general comments if there are any. And then I'll check with members if ever there are any specific things we'd like to follow through. I've asked the Secretariat just to speak to what we can summarize as areas that we may have to look at as a committee out of this discussion. Mbuyane wanted to say something.
Chairperson, thank you, man. I think the comment from Honorable Mantashe will assist the committee. Not specific that the Honorable Mantashe is not here, then they must not be respond. Then I think that response can be able to assist the entire committee, because the sugar industry is not for the only Honorable Mantashe, but it's for the entire committee. Thank you.
We like sugar. So you can comment on that, and then we take it. Maybe you can take colleagues first, then DDG will actually close up in terms of comments. If ever there are comments from colleagues, Eunice. And
yeah, I just maybe want to quickly run across some of the pointers that have been raised by the honourable members in terms, and I can bring it together, in terms of the one-stop-shop approach. You see, what we did is that when we started the program 2 years ago, we sent a letter to all 9 provinces, the premiers and the MECs. It's a very, very deep consultation process, because we don't superimpose national into this thing. What we want, we go through every province on a very deep and long consultation, because there are many facets to the program besides budget. But the thing is, for example, even with the way the program is, we're working with other government departments itself, like Home Affairs, SARS and that. Does SARS have the capacity for Limpopo or Northern Cape? What is their traction? See, so it's not how we move, it's how everybody moves. But what we want from the province is that within this consultation, economic development, industrial parks, special economic zones, we want them all to come together to say, look, this is what we want for the province. It's not like then where you start something and tomorrow the Durban Investment Promotions Agency says we are doing this. Then they need a Home Affairs person for that. So we want them to come and own the process through that consultation, so we're all in one. So basically the concept and the model that we do is that
we give sort of in simple terms like a franchise model, right? So the one-stop shop here in Pretoria is the same as the one-stop shop. It fixes the things and all can change. But it's the model, the concept is the same thing. But there has to be that consultation across all levels of government and state. And I think that takes time to get it together. So we are always ready, right, to do that. So that's why it's also capacity. Capacity from us, capacity in the province itself as to how fast people want to move. And there's been a lot of changes in the provinces itself that just takes time. But I think what we said is that in this year, we want to do at least 3 or 4, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, Free State. We're ready to get that done. So we have like an MOU with the province. When they get ready and they say, then they have to come to us and say, now we've decided this is the lead agency, this is who to do the project. We start the project team and we work with them throughout the process. We give them everything. So that's. But all, I think the only thing that we do is to say that everybody must come together and we must be one. Then we can drive the thing. That's all. So those things take a little bit of time. So then just quickly for the issue on the budget, it's actually the decrease we got is actually for the money that sets up the one-stop shops. So what we do is, as we know now that this particular province is committed and signed the MOU and SLAs and everything, we know we're going to go live, then we kick in the last year. What we did is we went into the budget estimate and got money, and we were able to pay out the other one-stop shops. But the budget is basically, it is a very small budget for the unit. It was 53 million last year, and it spiked up in the budget estimate, and it's now 58 million. So it's actually a net increase of 5 million when you take out the budget estimate increase. So those are the things. I think maybe what we can do is that, well, to answer the issue about the port at Kuka, I think that there is over the weekend there was a discussion between the ministers of public enterprises and Transnet on the growth store and the strike. Hopefully this week we can able to resolve those issues. The CEO is committed to that strike, and then hopefully that issue can be resolved. And then just to say that on the issue of how we work with the president's advisor, so president's economic advisor, Trudy McGuire, it's one investment mobilization. Right? We work together. We work together to that. We report into that. It's one investment here. So the whole total thing is we work in one loop. So we remember that the presidency doesn't have foot soldiers to do it. We are the foot soldiers that do the work. So it's one thing. And I think for us also that what we also do is that in this investment thing, we also develop an investment narrative. We do a lot of publications, and we have a very, I think I would say it's one of the most up-to-date websites for information that you want to look on investment, because when we're going up to the conference, the updates that you're looking for, we're going to put it live on the link on the investment conference site. And we're also going to prepare investor handbook that shows people how to invest in the country as well as invest the fact sheets. Thank you, Chair.
And then PDG will close up.
Any comment?
Chair, thank you. Nothing further for me.
Thank you very much, Chair. There were 2 points, and I'm happy that my colleague Eunice touched on it. A little bit, because one of the key things was how are we assisting exports, particularly in light of the Kuka issue. We are indeed seized with that situation. So the reason why I want to revisit it is that, similar to the matter of compensation, we do need a joint committee on this matter, I believe, to resolve, because it's quite multifaceted. There's DPE, there's SARS, there's DTI, there's Transnet, because in as much as it's the goal slow, we've also identified that there are fundamental issues around the investment backlog insofar as infrastructure upgrading that is affecting the conditions of service and the like. So we need to have a broader conversation about optimizing the port and being able to facilitate the exports. So perhaps we can look at systemically how we can all assist each other and reach across to the other committees to deal with the matter. Because not just a DTI matter, it involves many other, including the newly formed infrastructure department as well. There will be some implications for them. So I needed to make that point, Chair, and we'll be guided by honourable members and the Chair, of course, in how we can address that. Because it's quite interdisciplinary and it needs urgent attention.
So it means you will say agenda and then stakeholders.
Absolutely.
Link to that. Then we can be able to remember the earlier point raised by the honourable members to say, can we be issue specific?
Mm.
And can we actually be able to actually identify the key stakeholders?
Absolutely.
And the sense of program of what's required moving forward?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Can I make a last point as well, Honourable Chair, if I may? Also linked to the point that was made by Honourable Mastache around the work that we're doing to support cross-border infrastructure. Because one of the things that I want to leave with the committee is an offer to actually come and see one or two of our projects on the continent that we are supporting. Because under the auspices of the division, we also have oversight on ECIC, the Export Credit Insurance Corporation, who support quite a number of projects, particularly capital equipment and capital projects on the continent. We also, within the DTI, have a capital feasibility fund for feasibility studies to invest in infrastructure. We also have a cross-border infrastructure methodology that we're rolling out. So there's quite a lot that we're doing in the infrastructure space. However, it's always useful that you see this live. So that's an offer we're making. Should the schedule allow and the budget for committee, we believe it would be ideal, at least for members to have sight of some of the projects that we speak of. The minister, for example, during the budget vote speech, spoke of the Mozambique LNG gas project. We are in there through the ECIC as well and supporting the project. So it would be great to see some of those infrastructure projects that we're participating in. The port of Nacala in Mozambique and you know, Sand Power project in Ghana, for example. So, you know, we'd like to in as much as we're briefing, we believe that it would be ideal to have physical sight of some of these programs and projects that we're talking about. So with that, Chair, I will hand back.
I think the suggestion you're making fits very well on oversight that we actually do have as a committee. But on the other side, the issue of sugar does actually come through our legacy report in terms of departments. Having linked it up in that way, which means it's an issue that is obviously part of the program, in terms of taking the process forward, as a committee would actually definitely have to look at that as one of the issues from the 5th Parliament to the 6th that needs to actually be dealt with. So there are lots of suggestions or comments made from the members, and ministry is actually seized with that matter as well. So I think that's an issue we actually can pick up on. Can I then ask just the Secretary just to speak summarily on issues that might be the conclusion of our meeting? Because remember, this is an induction. You know, it's not the committee meeting. We have opened the meeting. We will just close the meeting. We don't adjourn. Does it make a difference? Okay, the floor is yours.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Members, we truly align ourselves as the Secretariat and the Chairperson's view with regard to how we plan our proposals. We have learned today with regard to how the whole workshop went in terms of the induction. The one thing that is very clear is that we are going to conduct an oversight very soon, in which we will cover what the DDG has also said, and practically the institution gives us authority to travel and to go to all those practical sites in order for us to, or for members to see exactly what is required. In addition to that, we will also be conducting an oversight that will be looking primarily at the department itself within the campus, where we are going to really be fed more on how operationally things are done. Besides that, the issue about interdepartmental and intercommittee is concretized also in our planning mission on the program. We do know that when time allows, we are going to really appraise every member about that. The other issue is with regard to outstanding issue, Chair, where the those incentivized with regard to international affairs, that was not addressed. Maybe you are still going to address it in writing or somehow. You remember there was a question about those black industrialists, how does it come about that, you know, we are not getting help? Finally, Chair, there are also issues that from the planning point of view, from the management committee, the committee will be appraised after the program will have been finalized. And I think my colleague, Rwanda, also wants to add something.
Just a follow-up issues in terms of the department to note things that we'll be expecting. I know the DDG noted the issue of the review of the export strategy. We'll have to follow up on that. Another thing in terms of the review of the footprint in terms of foreign offices, maybe in writing or later on the department can come back to us on when we can get that information to the committee. Another thing in terms of the committee, in terms of those joint meetings with the departments, I know we noted the Department of Labor and Employment and Labor, the new department. However, in terms of ease of doing business, there are other areas. We may also want to meet with the Department of Energy as well as other departments. That should be an ongoing thing, so that as Parliament on our side, we engage with the counter committees while the department are engaging with their other departments as well. I think those are the things that I've noted on my side. With DDG, I think another offer in terms of the oversight for the projects, the infrastructure project, we've noted that, like the committee secretary said. Thank you.
Tomorrow at 9:30, we do have the induction, DTI broadening participation, including the NEF, IDC, and the BBEE Commission. So I think that's going to be at, it's M40, same room. It's actually going to be tomorrow morning. So can I actually then thank you for your involvement and participation. We are part of a cluster, and we actually overlap over two clusters. There's cluster 4 and cluster 5, which is economics. So there will be actually issues we may want to actually follow through that overlaps through other departments, particularly those in our cluster. We are encouraging members of our portfolio committee to also make time to actually go and observe and support the clusters between 4 and 5. So the main one, which we're actually looking at, is cluster 5. But obviously, we do have the 4 cluster because there are two clusters, which are economic clusters. Thank you very much for your participation and involvement. Can we meet tomorrow, 9:30, same venue? Thank you very much.